All right, first question, the
What
hardest.
entrepreneurship feels like you're afraid of succeeding? Where does that come from?
Yeah.
Because we haven't gotten there. Why is entrepreneurship carry the fear?
Why does entrepreneurship carry so much fear with it? Why do we feel all the time that we're not where we want to be? Well, first of all, the rule of 72 isn't applicable to finance, it's applicable to life. So we have to remember ourselves, especially business, things happen very slowly, then all of a sudden. So things happen very slowly, and all of a sudden, even in economics, the evidence that we are presented with each day, it's either not there or contrary to where we want to be. I spoke about that on stage when I went BK, right? The evidence was contrary to where I wanted to be, but it was all in a growth towards where I wanted to be. So, first of all, it's so fear evoking because there's never evidence that we're going to get to where we want to be. That's why there's so many overnight successes that took 17 and a half to 35 years to get there. Because things happen so slowly, then all of a sudden, that's why the desire that you must be what you can be and the ability and capability of enjoying the consistent, everyday, persistent pursuit of your potential is so important. And that's why people get confused because they attach their emotions to outcomes. So they're constantly saying, I'll be happy when, instead of for the sake of what. Right? I wake up every morning and I say to myself, for the sake of what am I doing this? Not, oh, I'll be happy when I make my next million, 100 million, or $1 billion. It has no relevance because I know that there's two categories of behaviors. Either my behaviors today are aligned with where I want to be or better, or my behaviors are interfering with it. And I know that every time that there's uncertainty, it evokes fear. There's no more uncertainty than spending your whole life, money, time, emotion, with all the naysayers inside and outside of you. There's no greater way to perpetrate fear than to be an entrepreneur or a business person.
Well, so why in the market that we have so many different brands that when you try to launch your own brand, you get so much love from people?
So remember, people don't like change. The only people that like change are a wet baby. Okay. So you're going to get resistance all the time from everybody. Because think about it. I call them the ignorant arrogant. So the ignorant arrogant is the majority of the people, especially when we're striving to do what we dream about doing. So the ignorant arrogant are either haters, which they're obvious and they shouldn't bother you, but a lot of kids are bothered by the haters. The ignorant arrogance, and they'll just attack you and say, you can't do it. You're not smart enough. You don't have enough money. You'll never do it. Look, I could have been walking by in London and seen this homeless lady with a pencil and paper, and she offered me her script for $1 million. Right? And I'm an open-minded person. And I'm like, $1 million for a scribble on paper? Well, meanwhile, that could have been J.K. Rowling's selling me a $1 billion script. So, you have these ignorant, arrogant people that one will hate you no matter what. They're going to stop you because they're more afraid that you could actually do it than not. And you're going to make them look bad because they don't have any confidence and they're not trying. But here's the most dangerous, ignorant, arrogant people. The people that love you the most, your spouses, your parents. Why? Because all they want for you is security and safety. So my mom, her whole life spent giving me bad advice. Because she loved me so much. So every time I went for advice, she would pick the thing that was most stable and secure. So what did I hear all the time? Mom, I want to play football. No. Doctor, lawyer, or failure. You need to study. It wasn't because she didn't believe I could be a football player, which is probably true, but it was because she wanted me to be safe. Mom, I'm not going to go to law school. I mean, I'm not going to practice law. I'm going to go work in technology. Oh, no, the internet's a fad. It's never going to work. This is a woman who loved me too much, thought too highly of me, still till the day she died, did. But she was so afraid for me to get hurt, she gave me bad advice. So you're going to create resistance every time. Think about it. The most crazy people in the world are what? Every single one of your entrepreneurial heroes were called crazy and still are called crazy. Every one of them. I met J Bezos when he was selling books in his garage. Right? Imagine if he would have told me when I met him, like, dude, what do you do? I sell books out of my garage. I'm creating a marketplace for books. Oh, but someday, Dave, I'm going to be the richest man on earth, worth more than $1 trillion, and create the biggest marketplace that has ever existed. I'm a pretty open-minded, optimistic dude who doesn't like to give resistance, but I would have been like, dude, that guy's fucked. Like, good luck, man. If you need help, give me a call.
So from that place where you showed up at your mom's door, totally broke, got to return the house, what were the first steps you took from there to get growing on your...
Yeah. Well, my mom used to have this quote that I quote to everybody. You're either humble or you're about to be.
Oh, right. Wow. Yeah.
You're either humble or you're about to be. So my first step was to come back into humility.
Right.
And to take into consideration who I was, take stock in who I was and who I wanted to become. And then in humility, I have the best piece of advice I give to everyone. They'll say, what would you tell yourself when you're 18 or that day? Ask for help. Like, that's what I started doing. I sat in humility every day and said, I have relationships. I've never asked for help. And I had to go to people and say, man, I'm in a really bad place economically. I'm very capable. Can I give you a gift? I'm going to let you be as close to God as you can be because I'm going to allow you to be capable and able of helping me. And if you're able and capable of helping someone else, that's when we feel our highest self.
Right.
So every time you don't ask for help or every time you deny help, it used to drive me crazy. We're like completely broke. And my uncles were like, let me give you some money. Let me give the kids a car. No, no.
We're good.
We're good.
Yeah.
And she was cheating my uncles, right? Because they were able and capable of helping us. And it would have made them feel closer to God to help us.
Yeah.
And so I am a big proponent. I don't think people have a problem giving. I think they have a problem receiving. And I think they have a problem asking for more. I think there's no greater illustration of faith than asking for more or praying or it's in the Bible, right? Get two or more people together and they ask for what it's why the mastermind of Napoleon Hill.
So my name is Delano Green, by the way. And one of the biggest fears I have right now is writing large invoices. And like, cause sometimes I would have to charge a person like 40,000, 50,000. And in my soul, I'm just like, I don't feel comfortable charging this amount.
Yeah.
So how did you develop that to
take
that amount of money?
So here's an interesting, he has problem asking for a lot of money in his invoices.
Yeah.
And a lot of people do. And I don't have that fear anymore. Like I love doing $100 million deals that are easier than a $10,000 deal.
Right.
I love doing them. But here's where it changed for me is that value can only be derived in a few ways, first of all. So relative to price is perceived value and bottom line value. That's all you need to know. Whether you're a world famous orthopedic surgeon, whether you're a
car rental,
whatever it is. So remember, only two things, perceived value and bottom line value. Value is derived by giving people more of what they like or taking away what they don't like. Hold on. I'm going to finish. More of what they are. Works for them, give them more of what works or take away what doesn't work, or give them more of what they know or take away what they don't know. Now, here's what perceived value is. This is where you're having your problem. Perceived value is only indicated by two things, your comfort level and confidence in articulating it.
Yeah.
And if you don't believe me, take any market of luxury items or collectibles. It's all about the person who's most comfortable and confident in saying that this baseball is worth $6 million. This baseball card is worth $6 million. This car is worth $6 million. Yeah, but you bought that card for 10 cents. Now, in this negotiation of big invoices, you always have to know your bottom line though. What's bottom line indicative of? It's a value that's based off of what are you willing to take or buy or sell it for? That's it. That's bottom line. Has nothing to do with reality. Pricing has nothing to do with reality. So when you feel comfortable and confident in articulating a $40,000 invoice to exceed the value of what you're asking for, you're actually giving them something. I call it the 120 rule. I usually will ask kids to come on stage. I love it at school. And I'm like, anybody out there have $20? It's getting harder and harder because kids don't carry cash. So I was like, can I sell you? I'm like, fuck. This example is falling through the cracks. But in the old days, they would come on stage and I take the first kid to raise his hand, and then I'd say, hey, can I trade the $100 for your $20 bill? Yeah. And they almost felt nervous taking it. But you see all these different issues, and then I'd switch it, And I say, there's perceived value. That's it.
Just quick question.
Yeah.
On perceived value. Dave, thank you. Ari Galper and Provident Advisor Group.
Yes, sir.
Nice to see you again. So just to tee up on the question that you were talking about perceived value. So I'm growing my organization and I'm looking to communicate the value to potential investors. How do you position yourself the best for potential investors, especially for $10 to $15 million investments? And how do you deliver that value beyond just financials of good decks?
Yeah, well, you have to articulate it, like I said. So a lot of people don't practice, and you'll see this with engineers. They develop these extraordinary solutions, but they have no ability to articulate the value of what they've created. So they never can raise money. And it's incredible. So they'll hire someone like me to sell it because I know how to do that, even though I don't really understand the full solution that they have. So how do we get better than anyone? I make a lot of money coaching people. Hey, hold on one second, you guys. Sorry. All right. So I make a lot of money coaching people on this. They'll say, how do I get better at this? So in the conscious continuum, there's only one way to get better: practice. So if you're not in front of the mirror, selling your friends, your family, articulating again and again and again, I look at videos of me 10 years ago speaking compared to what I did today with no preparation, and it's night to day. Why? Because I speak 200 days. I've been practicing. So you need to practice. And also I would get, depending if you're $10 or $15 million, a coach that can give you feedback so that you're practicing well, right? There's two ways to practice. There's one, like the people who are working so busily that they forget to make money. People practice and they practice the wrong things. They practice with no feedback. And that now you're just wasting your time. So be intentional about the practice that you do. Practice well, right? Don't practice till you don't get it, until you get it right. Practice till you don't get it wrong.
Right.
That's Tiger Woods' line, by the way. I stole that. Got that? All right, perfect. All right, next.
Yeah, I got a question.
Say again.
What is the one thing that you tell yourself to get out of your comfort zone to get those wins?
Yeah, so there's three zones. Think of three concentric circles. There's three zones. One's a comfort zone. A comfort zone has constrictive energy to it. So if you stay in the comfort zone, you sit at home on your mom's couch, high, broke, sick all the time, sooner or later won't be able to do anything because the comfort zone keeps squeezing down like this. The other zone, the learning zone, is an expansive zone. The longer you stay in the learning zone with curiosity, being more interested than interesting, doing your best, learning lessons, and having fun, it expands out. So eventually, the size of what was your learning zone becomes your comfort zone. And the outside ring is called the anxiety zone, which has constrictive pressure as well. So some people push so hard, they live out in the anxiety zone, then they end up what? Broke, high, sick on their mom's couch, can't even get out of bed. So the easiest way to understand the comfort zone compared to the learning in the anxiety zone is that we want to stay in curiosity and interest. And so the more when we step outside and we feel anxious, we stop, drop, and roll, we come back into the learning zone, or we make sure that we stay out of the comfort zone.
So it's being self-aware of where that zone is and just acknowledging it and moving on anyway.
Staying
and keeping. Honestly, that's what's gotten me through this last year.
Because everybody through every year. You stay in the learning zone. You pursue your potential right here and then there. Go ahead.
I got a group. It's called the Trillionaire Mastermind. I just signed Keller Williams. I have 200,000 real estate agents that are now going to go to work for me to find one deal. So when your ambition is that big, what would you say to bring on celebrities or stars for? I have a Reg D 506C.
Yep.
We're raising $1 billion. What would you say the best way to bring on celebrities or stars to come into your platform so then we can go ahead and move forward with what we're doing?
Yeah. So a lot of people want influencers, celebrities, athletes, entertainers. I've been working in that industry a long time. And so it starts with the spheres of influence, meaning the people around them. So I wouldn't go directly to an agent because you're never going to get anywhere because they're just going to ask you for money.
Absolutely.
Right. So what you want to do is show up, get around the people that are around them, talk to them so that they suggest to them. So for example, when we ran the most notable sports agency in the world, one of the secret sauces I had, because I wanted to get to the same people you did, is I created relationships with every trainer in college and professional football. And everybody's like, Dave, why are you taking the trainer? Why are you taking Reggie from the Rams to the Super Bowl party? You could take Ricky Williams. Now, Ricky Williams could get himself in the Super Bowl party. Reggie is a trainer for the Rams. Trainers stay in a team longer than any other person in an organization, and they have a greater influence on the players than the coaches, the parents, anyone. They trust the trainer more than anyone else on the team. And so I built our whole practice because I had the biggest relationship capital with trainers who would, while they're getting taped or whatever, and man, I'm so nervous, I don't know who to sign with. Oh, you got to sign with Lee Steinberg. Dave's my guy, man. He took me to the World Series. He's, you know, whatever, you know, honest, whatever the things that he thought of me. While everybody else was giving away watches, cheating the system, talking to coaches. You know, I mean, coaches, they don't want to hear from 10 agents all telling them. I was the only one taking the trainers to dinner, to the parties, et cetera. So find the trainers.
Well, let's connect because I know you and you know the trainers. And I already have Keller Williams. We're going to buy 1 million properties.
There you go. Get my cell phone number.
Thank you.
And I'm happy to give everyone my cell phone numbers. Come to dinner too tonight. There's Nick.
Yeah, you're good.
Right here and then there. Go ahead.
So, thank you for doing this.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So, bro, I moved to Miami on Saturday. My goal is to build, I feel like Facebook, Doug Fien, all this rubbish social media is bringing us further apart. It's great to be here because you can just say hello to someone you know you're aligned. What happens when you're not? When you're walking down the street, you see a beautiful woman, you might have that spark. You see, you want to have a business meeting, you want to find people that are aligned. My goal is, long story short, to build Facebook for aligned people. So you could be anywhere. You could be in this event and know the three people who you need to connect with your goals. Do you have any recommendations? Because I genuinely know I'm not going to be able to order for coaching right now.
But you can. So if anybody wants to be coached by me, the majority of my coaching is free. Then I have a group that everybody can join. You get one-on-one coaching every week from me in a group setting. And that's depends. It's about $300 a year for that. And it's guaranteed. So if you have financial problems, you need your money back. It's just, I qualify by charging a little bit of money for everything I do, because if you can't afford it, you're not ready to be in the level I'm at. Or two, if you can't afford it, but you don't believe the guarantee or don't want to do it, it means you don't believe you're going to show up. I don't want people that aren't going to be engaged. I do have a one-on-one wait list. I have a business advisory and an investment group. All of those are available to all of you. Just let me know. I'd love to help you.
Do you have an email that I can reach out?
Yeah, everybody, I'll give my email and cell phone. I might as well do it right now.
Sure.
My email is my first name, David. It means beloved. It's on that book that you're holding. I'm not Warren Moon. I wish I was. Not really. I wish I could play football like Warren Moon. David is my first name at my first initial D from David and my last name, Meltzer. So beloved servant. So it's David beloved at D servant Meltzer. David at dmeltzer.com. Does anybody not have that, or a neighbor that doesn't have it? Hey, David. Good to see you. Okay. You're not following this guy, you should. David Williams. He's awesome. Then my cell phone number. If you can try not to text me, even though you're afraid to call, what I prefer is call me, and if I don't answer, leave me a voice message. That's all I prefer. If you text me, I get it. People shake their head. I'll call you, and they never call. Right now, I probably have zero voice messages. So here's my cell phone. Please use it. It's that phone right there. So if you start calling, it'll fuck up the IG. But it's 858-688-3294. Remember, I'm serious about my mission. So my mission is to empower over 1 billion people to make a lot of money, help a lot of people, and have a lot of fun. Because I've never met anyone who makes a lot of money to help a lot of people and have a lot of fun that isn't happy. So free, group, one-on-one, advisory, whatever I can do, just reach out. I have purposefully created buckets to help everyone. And there's people in this group that are in those different levels. That's one of my best advisory clients, have been for years with me. Right. And there's members of my group here. There's other people that just have followed me for 10 years. I go live almost every day like this, answering questions.
David?
Yes, sir.
I just reach out to you. It's clear to see. Thank you also. Just awesome. Cloud or Godarian Provident. We'd love to talk to you more. We'll be joining you.
Cool.
I want to ask, in a world, especially with all of our tech, we're thinking so much about material capital. And a lot of us know the importance and work with spiritual capital. But as I talk with you, and I thank Ari for bringing me here today, clearly you're someone who's mastered a level of deep thought on warm, intelligent spiritual capital.
Yes.
In this crazy tech world. So, you know, we all want more time with you. Could you speak a little bit about, you know, how to keep that balance?
So how do we keep a balance between this tech, which is accelerating, aggregating, and compounding, and spirituality? Your God is the best way that I can describe it, because I'm someone who appreciates everybody's different. I just want people to have faith. So if you want to pray to a pencil and that makes you a better person, I'm all for that. That's not my job. My job's to keep you aligned in the spirituality. So I believe spirituality is actually like a technology. Technologies are here to make humans more human. Spirituality is here to make humans more human and to stop interfering with one another, to be able to connect to this higher source of infinite information, intelligence, inspiration, and intuition, right? So if you can't reconcile technology with your faith, then you're going to be interfering between the hardest thing to decipher, which is the human experience, which starts when your heart starts and stops when your heart stops. So everyone's given the same human experience. Whether we look alike, sound alike, same height, we're all given a heart that starts and a heart that stops.
Okay. Awesome, David. Awesome. So,
and it's true. And it's divided by 24 hours, which is a man-made construct from the time a particle of light leaves the sun till it hits the earth. We all share this. So I reconcile the infinite with the man-made construct by creating non-negotiable behavior in the human experience, so that my non-negotiable behavior says I'm going to spend a minimum of 7 hours on my sleep, a minimum of an hour with my family, a minimum of an hour on my health, a minimum of time on my faith, a minimum amount of time on the activity I get paid for, a minimum amount of time, and studying relativity. That equals about 12 hours of my day. So what I've actually done is hedged the uncertainty of the spirituality of the infinite with the 24 hours I'm given, because I know that there's no certainty of what's going to happen today or tomorrow. So I give it certainty by saying, no matter what happens, I'm going to sleep right. I'm going to be healthy. I'm going to be with my family, with my faith, with my finance, with the study of time, so I'm more productive, accessible, and gracious with my time. And most importantly, I study the relativity of the activities that I do. Relativity means meaning. So in the context of spirituality, we give meaning to everything we see. Most people limit themselves because they give meaning to their past that limits their future. They don't align the meaning of the setbacks, failures, mistakes, defining moments, historical relevances, all of these different things. They don't align it where they think they want to be or better. They use it to limit themselves with their self-image. They say, oh, I lost everything. I'm a loser. My wife's going to leave me. My family hates me. And that's what happens. They get exactly what they pray for. When I lost everything, I did the opposite.
Yeah,
I started aligning the meaning of my bankruptcy to where I wanted to be or better. I'm going to prove that I can make more money, help more people, and have more fun by being kind and generous and being humble, not an arrogant a-hole who thinks he knows everything.
Right.
Well,
great. Thank you so much.
So, thank you.
David.
Yes, sir.
Huh? Good time. So I have a question back to the comfort zone topic.
Yeah.
A little bit. I'm dealing with something in that respect right now. Where, what do you do when you're scaling an organization? You're the leader, CEO, president. You have somebody that's absolutely integral to you personally and the organization. Maybe the best you got, but not fitting the culture. But bumping heads with a lot of people. Do you put them in a vacuum and keep the person that it's like cutting a limb off to take this person?
Oh my God. Oh my God. This is the hardest I've been. Yeah. Well, because we're protected, promoted, loved, and perfected. So my new book, Don't Do Business with Dicks.
Yeah. That is really your book name?
Yeah. So everyone has to understand that depending on where we're at in our careers and our jobs and our business, sometimes we have to balance or harmonize the dick with getting shit done. Mm-hmm. But there are some mechanisms on how to isolate the dick so he doesn't create. The first thing I would do is do a true economic analysis of the asshole. What does that mean? Emotional, quantitative analysis of emotional expense. So this employee you think is integral that makes you the most money. Let's take, for example, an employee that I had that made $500,000 a year. But more than $500,000. He probably was contributing to about $2.5 million in revenue profit. So I felt the same pressure. But when I sat down and analyzed how much energy he sucked from me, from my president, from the other employees, how many people quit because of him, I started to realize that what looked like he was a $2 million profit employee was barely a break-even employee. So I decided to fire him. Now, if that analysis comes out different and this guy's still an asshole, what I would do is partner with him. Kick him out of the company, partner with him, and say, look, let me back you. We're going to start a company doing what you do, and I'm going to refer business to you, but you're going to do this for me, and isolate him away from everybody else and allow you to make more money, not pay him a salary, and allow him to make more money as well.
Thank you.
Very common problem. All right, next question. Nobody.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Oh, right here then.
Go ahead. I
had one already.
I already did.
Dennis,
so, yeah. It's great to meet you.
So you're a place where you've been in the field for a very long time.
Yes.
2 decades. And you want to roll a few things out, and you're looking for investors. Like we mentioned, help. How do you know how to ask for help and when to ask for help?
Yeah, so how do you know what to ask for as far as help and when to ask for help? So first of all, when to ask for help is always. Because the fastest way to get to where you want to be. So that's my first route, is to ask for help. I'm constantly looking for things that are most important. Man, who do I know or who do I know? One of my favorite two questions are either, how would it help you if, or do you know someone that can help me? So if you do a capability analysis, being in the field for 20 years, saying, here's the capabilities that we need, and here's the best, most efficient and effective way to get that capability, and then go ask for help for immediately, or the people that sit in that situation or have that, by simply asking people, hey, this is subject matter, topic, expertise. What works for you? What doesn't? What do you know? What don't you know? And then get to the question, hey, would it help you if I was able to do this for you? And two, do you know anyone that could help me?